I'm saying Donna Dickens is a fucking cunt. How's that?
What the f***?
No, it's okay. On this show, you can say fuck.
Welcome to Saturday Night. I'm sick-ass Josh Hadley. No Kat this week because she had, like, some project at work or, you know, real life getting in the way priorities. I know. But Chucky is back with us this week. And isn't it funny that the first week Chucky is back, Kat's not? Shit just doesn't work out, man.
I know. This is just going to make the rumors that we're actually the same person all that much more worse. I mean, there's a lot of people out there who are convinced it's like a Norman Bates and his mother thing happening. Kat being Norman Bates and me being the mother.
Well, that's the way I figured it was going to go. Let's just get into...
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Charlie, I realize because it's a crime, the police can't avoid this. But in Portland, Oregon, the police had to chase down a stolen donut truck and then keep the donut truck as evidence once they caught it. Why not just be actual cartoons at this point, right?
It's a very Clancy Wiggum move, once again, involving cops and donuts. I mean, it's such a stupid stereotype when you think about it, because people give cops shit about everything. To give them shit about donuts almost seems quaint at this point. I mean, in light of Ferguson and all this other bad police shit, it's almost adorable that they like donuts. So I can see why stuff like this keeps popping up in the news. I'm also very disheartened that it does keep happening, though.
Can you just imagine what you would have been like as just as some guy looking down the street as five cop cars are chasing a donut truck speeding down the way?
I would definitely have my phone out and I would be posting that shit. You know what I mean?
It almost seems a little cliche, but at the same time, it is funny.
Oh yeah, it's definitely funny.
Let's stick with Portland, Oregon, and let's go to the 32-year-old USPS employee who over the last 2 years has stolen over 10,000 pieces of mail, kept them in his storage locker. Your mail's not even safe. He's being charged with 114 counts of felony mail fraud, 30 counts of identity theft. He was stealing the mail for their meth addiction. He would look for prescriptions in the mail. Hey, those are sellable, right? Birthday cards? Hey, people send money, right? Social security checks? Hey, I can forge a signature, right? Does this make you rethink the USPS a little bit?
Yeah, it does. It makes me think they definitely need a better screening process in place. I'm not sure what their end game was, though. I mean, just based on stuff that comes through the mail, because if it's a birthday card, it's a check. You're not going to be able to do anything with a check. Nobody's going to send cash through the mail. That's just dumb. I mean, the only thing that you're going to intercept in the mail that probably shouldn't be there is probably meth. So that would put you ahead of the game. You don't even need to worry about the storage lockers or anything else. Just get a job at the post office and intercept meth that gets sent through the mail.
What happened in this case was they were just basically taking everything. I mean, who knows how many people never got their water disconnection notice or never got... I mean, he was stealing medications from veterans when they're getting their medications through the mail. That's just fucking evil. He literally could have killed one of these people if their medication did not get to them on time. All because, dude, I got a meth addiction. I got to think about me, man.
Oh, no, it's despicable. I'm not saying that it isn't. It's like completely scumbag fucking... Just bad behavior, just making you a bad person. I get that. I do know, if it's any consolation, that in the event of mail order prescriptions, there are emergency procedures in place to where if somebody does steal the mail like that. I used to work for a company that did that. So there are procedures in place that'll stop people from dying. So it's not that bad, but it is bad. It's definitely bad.
Charlie, do you like porn on your Sundays?
Sure, who doesn't?
Well, how about in Virginia? Would you go to the church-sponsored porn Sundays?
I would be intrigued. I can tell you that.
Well, it's a bait and switch. Porn Sunday.
Okay. Now, when you say bait and switch, is it like of a really high caliber? Like, would you call it a master bait and switch?
Well, I'm sure there are master baiters that they switch.
I mean, was it more of a novice?
Pastor Joel Brown explains it. Pornography baits and switches you. It's an addiction that will kill your business, your family, your relationships. It might be uncomfortable, but I think it's the best thing for us to do if we truly love our kids is to equip them before they go and see all the collateral damage of an addiction. Unquote. They have these massive porn Sundays where you go to the church and you give all your porn to the preachers so they can dispose of it. And I know that that sounds like they're just trying to get free porn, but apparently they are actually disposing of it. This is one of those churches that porn is evil and the basis of everything that's wrong in society. I thought this shit was done with in the 90s, man. Are we still on this?
I actually thought this shit was done in a Chuck Palahniuk novel. Isn't that the plot of Survivor?
Well, do you think that this is just pulling on guilt? Hey, bring your porn down. Or is this guy, is Pastor Joel Brown stuck in the 1990s or the 1980s? I mean, porn is so ubiquitous today. You can't go anywhere without seeing porn. I mean, I get it. He's fighting an uphill battle. Fine. But what does he hope to accomplish? And why is porn the new enemy? How about child rape in the church? How about drug addiction in the church? I'm sorry. Looking at people fucking? Pretty low on the totem pole for importance, I would think.
Yeah. I mean, I know that in, like most hardcore Christians, in their eyes, all sins are equal and all sins are damnable. So he might just be that black and white about it. Like, porn is as big a sin as anything. I don't know what his endgame is. I don't know, like, what's different about when this shit was happening with Tipper Gore in the 90s. You can start a crusade against pornography if you want to. I don't know what kind of... I don't know. I don't know what you're going to accomplish by doing this, because there are so many porn websites on the internet. There is just no way for any religious group
Go to Google, turn off safe search, and look for anything, any word, and you're going to get pictures of porn that pop up within your first 20 results.
Yeah, right out of the gate. That's all it's going to be. I mean, there is just so much pornography on the internet. Back in the 90s, it was actually feasible to try to wipe out pornography because there was nowhere near as much of it around as there is now. And even back then, there was way more of it than they thought there was.
And even then, the pictures loaded a little bit at a time, so it was a lot more frustrating. Or am I the only one that remembers that period?
I didn't even own a computer until I was about 25 years old. So I was pretty much just in blissful ignorance during that whole beta testing internet porn period. But I don't know. There are many, many worse things out there to lead a crusade against if you really want to exercise what little religious power you see yourself as having. I don't know. I just think it's a misguided effort more than anything.
How about Donna Dickens from HitFlix chastising people who have a problem with the Tom and Jerry cartoons on Amazon Prime and Hulu Plus being labeled racist? Yes, they are racist. I'm not arguing
they
with that.
Totally they racist. Are totally racist.
I mean, Mammy Two Shoes, I can't count how many blackface references that they have. It's a racist-ass cartoon. But
it really is. I mean, I just...
Does it really need to be labeled racist? Because these things are labeling them as racist. Breakfast at Tiffany's isn't labeled as racist. Gone with the Wind isn't labeled as racist. And this Donna Dickens on HitFlix starts talking about, oh, all you wounded liberals, oh, how dare you take away our cartoons. Look at how... She's basically saying, if you have a problem with these being labeled racist, you are a goddamn racist. I'm saying Donna Dickens is a fucking cunt. How's that? You have to take these things in their historical context. In the context when Mammy Two Shoes was on Tom and Jerry, was it racist? Yes. It was also the way it was. Are you going to start labeling things racist from 2001 when all the TV shows were raging against Muslims? Hey, it's racist. It's also the historical context of when that was.
I do think it's racist. I think the Mammy Two Shoes, the whole bit, whenever you would see a stereotypically Southern black woman on Tom and Jerry, as racist, because that's not the intent and
just
it's not the focus.
Use the word that you know it is. A mammy. Whenever you see a mammy.
Right. Whenever you see a mammy, whenever you see someone who is like Tyler Perry but not Tyler Perry, that's pretty much it. But I don't think the cartoon should be labeled racist because that is not the focus. The focus is Tom and Jerry, cat and mouse, physical comedy. That is the focus of a Tom and Jerry cartoon. It's the focus of all the Tom and Jerry cartoons. In a couple of cases, the focus was classical music, but I don't think they should be labeled racist. I mean, they're just a reflection of the time in which they were made. Same thing with Jack Benny. I don't think Jack Benny is a racist person. I don't think he should be labeled or remembered as racist. But the character of
Rochester is totally kind of racist, though. Yeah,
totally racist, very much so. But it's just a reflection of that time. We have come a long way, and some things are very horrifying. But if it's not driven by hate, if it's not the intent, then I don't think that Tom and Jerry cartoons should be labeled racist. That's ridiculous.
Well, then what about Donna's position that if you have a problem with it being labeled racist, then you are racist? I think that's white liberal guilt run amok, isn't it?
Yeah, it kind of is. I mean, I was talking to a comedian at a show recently. He's black. He's been doing comedy for about a little over 5 years. That's about a year and a half more than me. And we were talking about political correctness. And he said that in his experience, the only people who worry about being politically correct don't know if they're racist or not. And they don't want to give themselves away just in case they are racist. If you don't worry about political correctness and you know for a fact that you are not racist, that's it. There's no need for any label of any kind. People know if they are racist or not. Okay? And if you're worried about political correctness, it's white fear. White fear of being embarrassed. White fear of looking ignorant when we totally know we're ignorant of most things.
Look at my example of like Gone with the Wind. They show that on AMC every year, like at Thanksgiving or whatnot. That doesn't receive a racism warning. How about Breakfast at Tiffany's? Mickey Rooney's a goddamn Oscar winner, and that's one of the most racist portrayals I have ever seen. Why are those not labeled racist? And I will not listen to anyone who says, because Tom and Jerry cartoons are aimed at kids. That's one of Donna's things, that these are aimed at kids. Hey, Donna, Looney Tunes cartoons and Tom and Jerry's aired before adult movies and were made for a teenage and adult audience. The cartoons back then were not kids' stuff. They're only kids' stuff today. Again, historical context.
Yeah, historical context is the point. I mean, I think that's the deciding factor, whether or not something could be considered racist, like intentionally racist. But I will tell you this, the character of Mammy in Gone with the Wind was not inherently racist. It was just a reflection of the time. That's how it was back then. However, the actress Hattie McDaniel winning an Oscar and not being allowed to attend the fucking ceremony,
that's just offensive.
It's incredibly offensive. I think anything that is a work of fiction, first of all, should only be taken so seriously.
But also,
I think a lot of this is examples of people that need to lighten the fuck up.
But also look at Mammy Two Shoes. This is a time period, like you just brought up Gone with the Wind. There were very few black actors and actresses that were taken seriously and had any kind of a true career in Hollywood. Mammy Two Shoes was voiced by a black woman. They used her mannerisms for the animation.
Probably
she was a working black woman.
Probably the same way they would with a white actress. That's how animation works. The voice is recorded, and the animators try to match the delivery of the dialogue.
Right. So this is one of the mainstream times where a black actress has got a mainstream role in almost lily white Hollywood. That was a boundary broke. Yes, she was playing a caricature, but she was. It's almost like everyone bitches about Amos and Andy, how on the radio they were white guys, but for the TV show they were black people. They were a couple of the few black people that were allowed to be on TV as black people. It might not be a great boundary to break, but it's still broken, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean every battle fought is a series of small victories.
I think what this is. People like Donna Dixon and other white liberals who are afraid of their white guilt, they're ashamed that they laugh at some of the blackface jokes. You know, Tom puts his head in the stove and it blows up and he comes out with the big lips and the nappy hair. It scares them that they found that funny. So they have to find a way to justify, oh, no, I'm not racist. It's funny whether it's racist or not.
Okay, when I was a kid, I had no idea that that was what it meant. You know what I mean? Like, whenever a cartoon character would have his face blown up and then come out looking like that, I had no idea that was a reference to black people, because I knew black people when I was a little kid. I knew they didn't look like that, so I never put two and two together. I laughed because it was a visually silly characterization, and I was a little kid watching cartoons.
But as Whoopi Goldberg very adequately points out, these cartoons need to be taken in their historical context and not censored. For the longest time, Looney Tunes censored a lot of these racist acts out of their cartoons. Remember the Looney Tunes where Yosemite Sam is on the Mason-Dixon line and he still thinks the Civil War is going on?
Yeah. Yes.
I saw that cartoon 100 times as a kid. My wife and I bought this uncut VHS tape in the mid-90s. All of a sudden, there's this scene I've never seen before of Bugs Bunny in full mammy outfit and blackface going, please, Massa, don't beat this tired old body, Massa, please, Massa. And I'm going, I've seen this 100 times. Where the fuck was this scene?
Yeah, it's really weird. When I had the Looney Tunes Gold Collection on DVD, there was a disclaimer at the beginning of every disc just about that, saying that these cartoons are works of fiction that are reflections of their era, bullshit like that. Pretty much, looking back, we know these are really racist, but we're not going to censor them, so just be an adult about it. It's pretty much what it said. And I think that's what Whoopi Goldberg is saying, too. I mean, we have a racist past. You can censor whatever you want. Nothing is ever going to change how horribly fucking savagely racist America was. In some cases, still is. But it used to be so much worse than it is now. And there's nothing anyone can do to change that. Just not looking at it, not acknowledging it. If I can't see it, it doesn't exist. That's fucking retarded. Acknowledge that America was fucked up back then, and that which also causes you to acknowledge how much better we are now. I don't think we should censor cartoons for that reason.
We ain't going to the party. We ain't going to the game. We ain't going to the disco. Ain't gonna cruise that way. Stealing people's mail. 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 On a Friday night. Tapping in the mouth. Right around, around. Run just through your mailbox, bitch. Take your mailbox to town. And we got better things when it gets back to church. Check the politicians from it, they burn. Money, bills, and candy checks. Pretty funny things about your kids. Gonna steal your mail. On a Friday night, we're gonna steal your mail. Last family night. We got a grocery town, but like 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 a grocery town. People say that we're crazy. It's taking all the load. But when we reach our letters, we're rolling on the floor. And we got money, but when it gets back to turn, tax politics from it, they burn. Money, bills, and cash check. We got a feeling shit with your friends. And to steal your mail on a Friday night. We're gonna steal your mail back in the night. We better not get caught. If it comes to institutions, we'll be closed and shut. Till we got our funny and Christian.
Do you want 100% uncut horror? All the blood, all the nudity, all for free? Then go to American Horrors at Filmon.com.
Hey, you guys, I am Hart D. Fisher. We are in the extra inning of Heart Attack. With me is Carl Crew. Josh Cranky Pants Hadley is not feeling well, so he's sitting out. We are continuing a long conversation with director, writer, actor Carl Crew, who is in one of my favorite goofy horror films, Blood Diner. He's my favorite part of Blood Diner. Carl is also the writer and star of the original Jeffrey Dahmer movie from the early 90s, and he's also one of the guys in this film that I'm in, 2035 Forbidden Dimensions, but Carl's got a bigger part than me, and he's better. He's better! But we're talking about the supernatural, and if you folks want to hear the rest of this conversation, we're talking about really interesting stuff. He has an awesome bar here. Where's your bar located, Carl?
We're in North Hollywood in the NoHo Arts District, and that's up on Burbank Boulevard with the cross street is Wankersham. And if you go to Facebook, CI Abnormal Arts, you'll see, you go to photo page and see thousands of photos. We specialize in freak shows, magic shows, really screwed up puppet shows. We have a museum with all kinds of crazy things, two-headed babies and mummies, and I had the body of a dead clown from 1912.
Who's a Mason, by the way, who is a ranking Mason?
He's a Shriner, yeah. He's a Shriner. He was in the first Shriners Parade in 1906 in Detroit.
And my old man was a Shriner.
Oh, that's too bad. You can take medication for that.
Your bar is awesome, Carl. I love your place. Folks at home may not know this. We shot the American Horror's Christmas special at Carl's Bar, and it is truly one of the coolest places to go in Los Angeles. You hear, yeah, come to Club So-and-So, meet some famous guy. It's all horseshit, man. This bar is awesome. It has a real vibe, a real serious vibe, and you have great bands play there, and I have yet to have the food. I don't know if the food's any good. Is the food any good?
Oh, yeah. We're putting in a Thai restaurant.
Oh, Thai food. All right, well, enough about your bar, you bastard. We were talking about Shadow Men on the other show, and you were – because this is something that's come up with me. I've been working with a gentleman. I've been doing a lot of research for this new TV show I want to do. Right now, when I talk about it publicly, the name is The Fulci Experiment, and – you're a person that I've talked to extensively about supernatural goings on, and I've been running into this issue with shadow men. People have been talking about seeing shadow men. What's your experience been with that?
Well, like I say, recently I've been approached by, because of the museum here and because of the knowledge I have about these certain things, people just suddenly start a conversation and say, you know, I heard that you knew something about this, and this is what happened to me. And a lot of times there's shadow men involved. And to me, it's like potato, potato, demon, demon, you know, it's like, it's the same thing as another form. And my first question to anyone who has any involvement or has had any experiences with stuff like this is that what kind of occult activity can you pinpoint in your life or in your family's life? And usually they'll say, well, my aunt was this and that. Oh, my great grandma was blah, blah. Because a lot of occult powers are passed generationally down through the family. And it's a demonic thing. It's a demonic thing where the demon, the familiar, is holds on to the family and is deposited in the younger members of it as it goes on. It skips a generation, supposedly, but whatever. So that's the first question, and usually it's yes, and if it's not, is there something that you're doing? Are you seeking out occult books? Are you trying to find, everything from tarot cards to astrology? Astrology I describe as a frosted cake of poison. So, I'm a Leo. I'm a Leo. And that's the frosting on the cake. But then you say, well, I don't know what the cake tastes like. And so you take a bite. And, I wonder what my fortune is today. I wonder what my astrology says today. You know, and you're drawn into it. Everything about the occult is something that they lay bait for you, and you're drawn in. Oh, I want to go to the next step. And that's what it's all about. And,
I've got a Crawley tarot deck, here in my house that I picked up. I've read extensively about occult stuff. I've had various satanic cults try to recruit me to become a member. My father was a Shriner, I've had a lot of experiences, actually. I didn't think too much of it growing up, but as an adult, you look back and you're like, yeah, that was really weird. And you've definitely had some very strong experiences. When you talk about shadow men, what exactly do you mean? Like a shadowy humanoid figure that people see out of the corner of their eye?
Yeah, that could be it. It takes many forms. I mean, all the way to the MIBs, Men in Black, and all that stuff. It's all the same thing. You know, and speaking of, when I did the, jumping back to the Dahmer film, I got a call from somebody named Xena. A few years after I did the Dahmer film, maybe a year, and it was Xena LeVay, and I've met her before, and her husband Nicholas from Radio Werewolf and all that stuff. And anyway, they're the real deal. I mean, she runs the Temple of Set in Germany, and she was interested in buying my props from the Jeffrey Dahmer film. And I said, cool, whatever, and I sold them to her. But whenever they would come by the club, it was like spiritual baggage would come with them. There would be dogs barking in the street, and I kid not, there was chaos that followed them. And I got along with them. I mean, Max, I he's a conspiracy aficionado, and I got him on a couple ones that he didn't know about. But nonetheless, there was definitely a spiritual wake. And they called me up a few months later. Oh, yeah, you got to come down and see the museum. And I said, oh, okay, where are you? We're on Hollywood Boulevard. Oh, okay. Well, I'll come down. Oh, what's the place called? Hell House. Oh, okay.
Of course,
so
right?
I go down. What?
Of course, let's fulfill the role. Of course we're at Hell House. Where else would we be?
Exactly. And I go down there and I see Hell House. And I go and I walk in, there's like 8 TVs with my face on it playing the Dahmer movie. These little shrines with all these props from the movie. And then around everything else is satanic books and upside down crosses. I'm like, my mother would be so proud. This is really dark. And the only cool thing they had there was really cool was a bookshelf that revolved, and they had a serial killer museum of wax figures made by Madame Tussauds.
Mm-hmm.
That was creepy, and that was cool, you know. But other than that, wow, it's really intense. You really have to be spiritually prepared for people, for the real people. I've met a lot of posers.
Me too.
You know, I'm this and that. I'm this and that. Oh, really? Okay, because you wear that shirt or because you have a pentagram around your neck or whatever. But then there's the real people, and they generally really don't talk about what they do.
Right.
And but, you know, one thing that I discovered that protects you from that it says in the Bible, it says that the name of Jesus, the demons tremble at, and they flee when the name of Jesus is mentioned. And that's one of the, as a Christian, that's one of the weapons you have. You have holy weapons. One of the most powerful is the name of Jesus Christ. That's why it's so taken, you know, oh, JD, blah, 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 all the time, because it's so powerful. And, you know, God damn, I mean, that's a very powerful thing. It's the name of Jesus and the power of the blood. And that is the most sharpest weapon you could possibly have, anything over anything demonic. But you know, you better have the Holy Spirit inside of you when you use that, because otherwise, child, you're gonna be in trouble. Yeah, because you're already not protected, you know.
Right,
and so
right.
This is what I've discovered over so many years.
Well, that's a big part of experimenting with the occult when you're on drugs, is you have not prepared, you don't have the tools to navigate the spiritual world. You've been ripped from your vessel with this drug, and I understand very much the ABCs of black magic that you're talking about.
Right.
I get it very much, because it's a shortcut. It's kind of like
steroids.
Exactly. It's like steroids.
Right.
You're beefed up with muscle, but you're not really strong. It's fake.
That's right.
It's fake.
Well, it's fake because it's the illusion that you have this power when it's just being provided you by a demon.
Too much evil. That's too much evil.
Charlie, describe irony to me.
Well, in its simplest definition, irony is the stated meaning being something different from the intended meaning or the interpreted meaning. Just saying one thing meaning another, pretty much. I can tell you what irony is not. Irony is not rain on a wedding day. It's not 10,000 spoons when you need a knife.
Do you think that irony is Fox News lashing out at President Obama for his, quote, childish and petty attack on Fox News during his speech on the economy last week?
Yes, I find that to be both ironic and delicious.
Because, yeah, Fox News got pissed that President Obama completely called them out on their bullshit when they have been taking shots at him for six straight years now. They're calling him all of a sudden petty and childish because he actually answered one of our attacks. Oh my God, that nigger son of a bitch.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous.
Because I found this to be either they don't understand irony or they understand it all too well.
I think they understand it. They just don't give a fuck. I mean, they have been waiting 6 years for any reason to lash out, like anything to respond angrily to, and they finally got it. I don't think they need to justify it to anybody.
Well, first of all, his quote was fantastic. He tweeted, "While affordable health care might still be a threat to freedom on Fox News, it's working pretty well in the real world." Apparently, that is the petty and childish comment that Fox News is all over him for. That, oh, you know, this is below a president, and how dare a president do this, and, you know, we're a news organization. No, you're not. You sued and won the right to legally be able to lie on the air and still call it news. You don't get to get pissed off about this.
I'm trying to imagine what it's like to be on Fox News and have to be the representation of the stupid shit that they report on. Fox News has been the lowest form of yellow journalism since Jesus Christ, since William Randolph Hearst reported
on. I think since actual yellow journalism.
Yeah, since the fucking phrase was coined. Fox News is as bad as it's ever been. And I just can't imagine what it's like to have to be on that channel spewing this stupid shit. I think after doing it for so long, which is pretty much since 2001, unofficially, I think that was why Fox News is what it is now. But having to just...
They were pretty bad in the 90s, too. Because they started in 1996. They were pretty partisan right off the bat.
Yeah, I think it just took him a few years to just stop trying to be sneaky about it. You know what I mean? Yes, and that was 13 years ago. After just being so on its face full of shit for 13 years straight, you've got to cross some sort of boundary where you just do not give a fuck anymore. And if President Obama calls you out one time since he's become president, one time in 6 years, you are going to jump all over that.
Okay, how about a less brutal... I don't even consider this irony. I consider this evil. Now, you being a comedian, I'm sure you know about Tracy Morgan's accident earlier this year, right? Where he got hit by a Walmart delivery truck.
On the New Jersey Turnpike.
Yes. Now, what happened is the truck driver fell asleep at the wheel. He was working past his allotted number of hours because, gee, imagine this. Walmart overworks even their drivers to save a dollar. Walmart is not contesting that their driver caused the accident, okay? They are saying they are not going to pay Morgan's medical bills because he wasn't wearing a seatbelt. Quote, "Accordingly, all or a portion of the injuries could have been diminished or minimized by the exercise of reasonable conduct using the available seatbelts," unquote. They're basically saying, we hurt you, but we're not going to pay for your extensive injuries, because if you'd been wearing a seatbelt, we wouldn't have hurt you as bad. This is just pure, unadulterated fucking evil, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty hard to find anything else to call this. Because a couple of things about this. I'm trying really hard to be fair to both sides, but there's just no defending Walmart in this case. I mean... what they're exercising is what they're doing, what they've done for their entire workforce, employees in stores, manufacturers, drivers, shit like that. Instead of hiring two people for two jobs, they will hire one person for one double job because it saves them money. And that's what was happening to this driver. That's why he fell asleep at the wheel. I would like to stress that. Tracy Morgan was in a limousine, and I'm sure as soon as any of you get into a limousine, the first thing you do is put on your seatbelt, because, yeah, that happens all the time.
That's what limos are for, right?
Why fucking have a limousine if you're not going to wear a seatbelt, you know what I mean? And they're grasping at straws to try to forgive what they did, which was hire one driver for two jobs. And it's not working, because it's just at such a high point of just cold-hearted fucking corporate negligence that it's hard to even take seriously. Like, this is like a cartoon evil thing that would happen. I expect Mr. Burns to do shit like this.
But look at it like this. How did they think they would not get a public backlash for this? Now, if they hit you, that may be one thing. Tracy Morgan is pretty high profile. You knew he was going to go public when they said, we're not paying your medical bills. How did you think you'd keep this under the rug? I mean, I don't see an upside for them. I mean, Christ, their insurance company should be taking care of this. I don't understand why Walmart corporate is so, well, you weren't wearing a seatbelt, so our guy hitting you because he fell asleep at the wheel is your fault because you should have been wearing a seatbelt. This is asinine.
It's pretty bad, man.
Just one more reason that Walmart is the epitome of pure fucking corporate greed and evil. All right, well, let's move on from that to something a little more serious. We were talking a little while ago, you and I were talking about the movie Ed Wood off mic before the show.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you remember in 1990, there was the Happy Face Killer, right? You remember when he was going around the country?
Yeah, I was, I was like 10 years old, I think, in 1990. So I remember seeing it come up in the news and being confused by it, but I don't remember looking into it any further than that at the time.
Well, Lifetime just made a movie about the Happy Face Killer. Now, he killed a bunch of people and he let one lady go because she had her infant with her at the time. This was a working mother of three, okay? In the TV movie, they made her out to be a prostitute that is trying to extort money from truckers at a truck stop.
Yeah.
She's suing for that. Not only did she survive this killer after being raped for 3 days and try to save her child, Lifetime says for dramatic license, they turned her into a prostitute because it made telling the movie better. She's suing Lifetime. I think she should. That's ridiculous. There's artistic license, and then there's pure fucking evil.
Not unlike Walmart.
What do you think about this? Do you think that Dawn Slagle being portrayed as a prostitute instead of a mother of three trying to save her infant child from a serial killer is a little more than dramatic license for storytelling purposes?
Yeah, I think I can't tell you exactly where the line is, but I can tell you it's in front of that. You cannot do that. The only way you should be able to take, I mean, in an ethical world, the only way you should be able to take artistic license with something that is not yours is if it is a work of fiction and you're wanting to deviate from the source material in an adaptation type situation.
Except this something really like happened.
That. Yeah, this is real life. That is a real, still living person who went through terrifying hell and survived it. You don't fucking do that. That's a real person. I don't think Lifetime should be able to do that.
Another reason that they're claiming that they did it, they went to her to try and get the rights to her life story. She said she wouldn't, you know, obviously she probably doesn't want to relive this part of her past, right? So she wouldn't sell it to Lifetime. Lifetime saying, well, then at that point, we have to fictionalize it because we can't make it too close to what really happened. Otherwise, you'd be able to sue us for infringing on your life story. So now you're an embezzling prostitute. What the fuck kind of rationale is that?
Again, this is some Mr. Burns shit. Constantly baffled on this show when I learn about some of the shit people are capable of.
Well, this is Lifetime. They don't exactly have, you know, they don't exactly have standards.
Yeah, Tori now, Spelling. I'll just say Tori Spelling if you're wondering what kind of standards Lifetime has.
I don't know what she hopes to get out of this other than maybe some money. Slagle, she's now an RN. She's a registered nurse. She has hired an attorney, and she's suing Lifetime. Problem is, the movie's already out there. Even if she would win, they're not going to pull the movie and change her scenes. Other than money, what can she actually get out of this? I mean, is Lifetime kind of insulated in this, that they're like, hey, we've already got the ratings, and now people are going to want to go see the movie because you're suing us. It's great publicity. Thank you, Slagle.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. That's that's what Lifetime Network is taking from this. It's not right. This is definitely an instance of just the bad guy winning with shitty non-existent ethics. It's not cool, Lifetime.
I would like to see Lifetime penalized for this. I'd like to see the FCC step in and say, you know what? You can't lie and call it the truth. Although if you're Fox News, you've got that legal right. But you know what I mean.
Yeah. I guess that's one thing Schlegel can get out of this is just exposing the Lifetime Network as soulless, ghoulish assholes.
Which we all kind of knew, but it's nice to have it confirmed, right? I don't know how to feel about this next one. How about the Chicago area sperm bank that's being sued by two Ohio lesbians? Because when they, you know, you go into a sperm bank, you choose from the profiles who you want and whatnot. They chose profile number 380, a white person who had all the characteristics and attributes they wanted for their child. They were accidentally sent profile number 330 of a black man. Jennifer Clampett got pregnant. They're both white. They have a half-black baby now. I mean, obviously it's the sperm bank's fault, but Clampett is trying to claim, we live in an all-white community that has a Klan presence. Our daughter is not going to have an easy life now being half-black because they couldn't send the right goddamn sperm sample to us. I think suing, they're going to win. There's no doubt about that. Is that also trying to pass racism off? By saying that our daughter's going to have a hard life because of the community we live in? I mean, obviously the community is tolerant enough for lesbians living there. Is a half-black baby that big of a deal? I mean, it's still your daughter. It's still half of Clampett's DNA.
Racist and ignorant males are definitely more forgiving of lesbians than they are black people, for obvious reasons. I mean, you have the internet. You know what's out there.
Go back to my thing about Google image search.
Exactly. That's probably just some male ignorance right there. I'm looking at who's at fault here. I mean, I think the couple.
Well, the sperm bank is obviously at fault.
The sperm bank is obviously at fault because they delivered the wrong product. After carrying the baby to term for 9 months, there has to be some sort of maternal bond already built up. I think rather than sue the sperm bank, I probably would have just moved to a new town, because why the fuck haven't I moved to a new town anyway if there's a fucking Klan presence? Don't live there. Here's a very good reason for you not to live there. You're welcome. Enjoy your life together.
She's also complaining that the baby, which has kind of a, the only way I can put it, like the nappy hair, she has to get the baby's hair done at a black salon in a mostly black neighborhood, and she feels uncomfortable taking her daughter to get her hair done.
Okay, well, don't feel uncomfortable about that, because that's racist, so just stop fucking doing that shit.
If anyone in the black neighborhood is making you feel uncomfortable, welcome to Jim Crow America.
Yeah. What were we saying earlier about irony?
So, I don't know. Like I said, I'm on the side of the lesbians because obviously they were wronged by the sperm bank. By the way, what the sperm bank did, they refunded all their money and that's it. We sent you the wrong thing, so here's a refund. I think you owe them a little bit more than a refund.
And you know
that's
what?
Just me.
Three extra punches on your card. There you go.
Yeah, it's like, I think that they're owed a little bit more than a refund. What they're suing the sperm bank for is, quote, wrongful birth and breach of warranty, citing the emotional and economic losses that Crampett has suffered.
Breach of warranty? That sounds so weird.
Cold.
We're talking about a human child.
Yeah. And there's pictures. She's this cute little girl. You know, they're talking about her like she's a fucking commodity.
Yeah.
It's this cute little girl.
In that respect, everybody is at fault. Get some fucking perspective and start looking at her like she's a human being, because she is. Don't be talking about this breach of warranty shit. That's just ethically not right. It just hits me wrong, okay?
No shit.
I don't know. I think the most fair way to solve this case, which will never happen, by the way, under our current Jeffersonian jurisprudence, because it would be too fair and there's no legal precedent for this. But I think the sperm bank should pay for the relocation to a more tolerant city for the entire family, for both partners and the baby. They need to pay all the moving costs. They need to pay first and last month's rent on the new place, whatever they have right now. They need to safely relocate them to a better city.
Crampett's also afraid of her family, that her family is, quote, inherently racist, and it took them forever to come to terms with her lesbianism. Now she's afraid that they won't come to terms with her half-black daughter. You know what? Then fuck your family.
Fuck them.
You know, if you know they're that racist, fuck them.
Yeah, I mean, since you paid for the in vitro fertilization and everything, I am assuming they have money. They're financially stable. If you're not dependent on your parents in some way, you don't have to talk to them at all if you don't want to.
Or you could maybe use little Peyton as a way to show them that racism is stupid.
Yeah, there could be a happy ending.
That, you know, you are blood related to this little black girl, whether you like it or not.
She has your DNA. If you need a kidney, guess who you have to come to?
Well, let's go to our last bit of ignorance. Israel National Airline El Al has been criticized for allowing ultra-Orthodox Jewish men to stand in the aisles and disrupt a flight because they refuse to sit next to women. Because in the ultra-Orthodox Jewish tradition, a man is not allowed to have any contact with a woman he is not either married to, engaged to, or has a familial relation. These four ultra-Orthodox Jewish men found that on their trip to Israel, they were seated next to women. When the airline refused to move them, they protested by standing in the aisles, getting in the way, and creating trouble on the airline. Now, that's stupid in and of itself. Why do we allow this to happen? Because if these were Muslims instead of Jews, this would have had a very different ending, wouldn't it have?
Yeah, I think it would have. I don't know what to say about stuff like this anymore. I mean, so much stuff happens that is all solved by the same thing. Don't take your religion that seriously that you're going to have to fucking bitch and whine until you get your way when you're trying to fly somewhere. Because think about that. You were trying to fly somewhere. All of your superstitious
to
bullshit
Israel.
Was written. Yeah, first of all, to Israel, which, I mean, think about it. I don't know how old these people are, but you can't possibly be that old. Don't take this shit so seriously, man. The Torah was written a long, long time before airplanes were even a thing. I don't think that was taken into consideration when shit was written. So you have to wing it occasionally. If you're going to be super religious, just know that all these historic texts did not account for everything. Okay, it's 2014. They didn't even know there were going to be airplanes back then. Try to just wing it on your own sometimes. You know what I mean?
But then there's also the issue of I mean, we bitch about the Christians enough. This whole my religion is more important than anything else. I should not have to be in contact with a woman because my religion forbids it, and everyone else should have to go out of their way to accommodate my religion.
That's what I have the problem with. I have that problem with Christians. I have that problem with Jews. I have that problem with Muslims. I have that problem with anybody who's going to put their own religion in front of the needs of other people. You can't do that. We're a fucking society. We are all living on this planet together. You have to be tolerant of others sometimes, and that includes not disrupting everything for your own stupid little bullshit needs. If you have a religion, that's great. Have your religion. Don't force it upon anyone else. If you have to fly somewhere, and in order to do that, you have to sit next to a woman, but if your religion won't allow that, then you're not flying there. It is not your airline. The airline is there to serve everybody. Fucking make it all about you, you know what I mean?
How about the subway in New Jersey, where a veteran went in with his legal helper dog. It's not like a seeing eye dog. It's more like a PTSD dog. Sure. Into a subway. And the Americans with Disability Act says that restaurants have to allow service animals, right? The subway is owned by ultra hardcore Muslims. They not only kicked the serviceman out, they refused to allow his dog and then took down the AMA sticker out of their window that no longer says that they allow service dogs. The U.S. government says you have to. They're saying, no, we don't. Our religion sees dogs as filthy creatures. I don't want them in my subway.
Jesus Christ. People, try not to be such fucking doofuses about this.
It's just, you know, my religion says fuck the Americans with Disabilities Act because my religion. No, your religion does not trump the Americans with Disabilities Act. You have to allow a service animal. You don't have a choice in this.
Yes, if you take down your AMA sticker, then you will lose your licensing and accreditation as a means of public transport, and you will be shut down. If you want to be shut down for your religion, fine, go ahead and do it. It's stupid, but you can do it.
Charlie, these are the kind of people that kind of believe in martyrdom. I'm just saying.
Oh, okay, that's fine. If if they want other people of their religion to view them as martyrs, then that also does not affect me. If that's why they want to do it, then that's fine. I'm just saying, in general, both the veteran with the service animal for making it a legal issue and both the owner of the business for sticking so closely to religion, no matter how fucking ignorant it is, you guys just need to lighten up. We're living in the modern world. All religions are based years and years and years ago. I think the youngest religion is Scientology, and that started in the early 60s.
70s. I thought that was the early 70s, but I might be wrong.
60s, 70s, somewhere around there. That is the youngest religion. The world is a 100% different place. You have to allow for concession. I think that might be a little too close to believing in evolution, which is why a lot of them probably don't do it. But you will save yourself a lot of heartbreak. Just regardless of your legal rights, regardless of your right to practice whatever religion you want to, just in terms of common sense and keeping peace amongst fellow humans, lighten the fuck up about that.
Well, if people want to lighten the fuck up, where would they go to see or hear anything from Chucky McMullen?
You can find me on Twitter, at Charlie McMullen, Facebook, geekjuicemedia.com. And if you are in Colorado Springs, I will be performing at Looney's. So if this is going to air next Saturday, then come out and see me tonight at Looney's.
And you can find me at 1201beyond.com. Contact the show at 1201beyond@gmail.com. Hopefully I'm not still sick next week. And Kat and Chucky should be here.
What the fuck is a 1201 Beyond production? Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.